The March of Dimes flunks Jacksonville for its high preterm birth rate. Duval is the only county in Florida that won't be involved in a big solar power project. And city officials head north of the border to study the success of Toronto's downtown. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9, and you can always get our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or through our app. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Get on the line now and join us, 549-2937. Then later, why a group of ophthalmologists from far-flung lands are visiting Jacksonville this week to study at our medical facilities. Plus, we'll tell you about one delicious event coming up this weekend at the Jacksonville Arboretum. You can eat your way through it. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday and time to discuss a busy news week as we welcome Tessa Duval of the Florida Times-Union. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal, is here.
Good to be here.
Folio Weekly editor Claire Goforth back with us.
Good morning.
And our own WJCT reporter Ryan Bank.
Good morning.
Guys, so good to have you all. Lots to discuss this week. Everything from Duval being left out of a big solar power opportunity in Florida to that big Jack's Chamber trip to Toronto. What could they learn from Canada? We'll take a look at that and more. But our top story this Friday, the March of Dimes says Jacksonville is failing when it comes to preventing preterm births in the city. Now, preterm births are a big problem because babies born early are more likely to face health problems than those that are carried to a full term. The rate of babies being born premature in this area, or rather, is on the increase across the country, with 8,000 more preterm births last year than in 2015. And Jacksonville's rate is higher than the national average. According to the March of Dimes report, 11.5% of births in Duval County are preterm. That is defined as happening before 37 weeks of pregnancy. The Duval County Health Department says some of the numbers, though, used by the March of Dimes actually came from 2015 and that the rate did go down somewhat last year. Now, there are also lots of factors that can lead to a preterm birth and no easy solutions. We're going to begin the hour with a closer look at this, and the number to join us, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can weigh in on Facebook as well. And so when we look at Duval County as compared to the rest of the state, we've got a worse rate than other large Florida counties like Broward County, Miami-Dade County. We're not doing well in this area. Claire Goforth, we are flunking. Too many babies being born early, that's a canary in the coal mine, so to speak, health officials will say. When you look at how healthy an area is, we're not a very healthy area when you look at this indicator.
No, we are not. And interestingly, Duval County is abysmal, obviously. The southeast is also abysmal. If you look at the map, only Virginia and Florida in the southeast have a grade that's a C or higher, and both of them have a C. But, you know, preterm birth is also the single most biggest contributing factor to infant mortality. And really, the single biggest contributing factor to preterm birth is poverty. Last night, I took a map that showed the highest poverty rates in counties in Florida, and I compared it to this map. And it was stunning to see how the counties with the highest rates of poverty also had the highest rate of preterm birth.
Wow, that is not good. 549-2937 to join us. And when you dive deeper into the numbers, Ryan Bank, across the country, black women 49% more likely to deliver a preterm baby than white women. That is also a factor here in Duval County, where African-American babies are almost three times as likely to die before their first birthday than the white baby in the crib next to them, as our own reporter Lindsay Kilbride reported yesterday. And what she also reported is that even if you're an African-American woman who has a good job and live in an affluent community, not in Health Zone 1, say, you still have a higher rate of a premature birth. And researchers are trying to figure out why. They think subtle stressors like institutional racism can actually play a part in this.
Yeah, I mean, that to me was the most
the most kind of jaw-dropping part of this study was the, or this report was the fact that race played a factor, but unlike a lot of other reports, the connection between being minority and being poorer or having less opportunity wasn't necessarily the reason why they could explain why these babies were being born before they were supposed to be. So, yeah, subtle factors and lifelong factors like institutionalized racism could be an issue.
But the health department, Tessa Duvall, they're pointing out this is a complicated problem, and they're working to close the mortality gap between black and white babies, working to lower preterm birth rates in this county. And they did make some progress last year.
Right. And I mean, this isn't just a Jacksonville issue. I mean, especially the racial disparity that is prominent everywhere. And it's unfortunate reality that, you know, in our community, we do see a lot of overlap between, you know, women living in poverty and also happen to be women of color. But, you know, we're learning that even as that's controlled for, you know, it really does keep coming back to this racism factor. And again, that's not unique to Jacksonville. This is something that's been studied and studied and studied. And, you know, there have been groups in Jacksonville who have been talking about this for years. And really the only thing that national researchers can keep coming back to is this subtle, everyday, just, you know, stress from kind of institutional racism that women of color deal with that white women don't.
And Tim Gibbons, as our business editor, when a company is looking to relocate to a city, they look at a lot of indicators, like how good are the schools, what's the talent pool like? But they also look at health factors, and this is one.
They look at a range of things. Obviously, they want their employees to be healthy and happy and being in areas where it's less likely to can be a problem. What I think this also points up, though, is kind of the challenge of some of the problems that we talk about a lot on this show, of things like education and juvenile delinquency and things like that, where, you know, if you're born premature, you're less likely to do well in school. You're more likely to get in trouble in other ways. And we have people who basically from the get-go are starting so far behind. And a lot of times we talk about dealing with those problems at the end, where it's really things like dealing with this problem that helps, you know, 20, 30 years in the future.
Claire, go for it.
Yeah, certainly. One of the interesting things that this brings up is some recent studies that have been discovering that certain DNA, certain of your genetics are unlocked by environmental factors, by experiences. So we used to think of DNA as sort of a fixed entity, that we're born with our DNA and then the environment is sort of something separate from that. But what we're starting to realize is that actually, in fact, the environment can trigger certain genes to impact your physiological well-being.
Right. And parents, and I'm not even just speaking of the parents who are having the premature babies, but parents, it's also been shown in certain studies that they can actually you can inherit your parents' stress factors that they've had in their lives. And then maybe that could also lead you to having a preterm baby. So there's a lot of factors here, and it's going to take a really long time to try to figure out exactly what the reason is for this disparity. But I think we kind of already have the tools and we know kind of what we need to do to try to close that gap.
And not have an F. Jacksonville right. is flunking, according to the March of Dimes, on this health indicator. What are your thoughts? Give us a call. It's our Friday Media Roundtable. The number to join the show right now, 549-2937. Let's begin with Matt on the South Side right now. Hey, Matt, happy Friday. Good morning.
Yes, indeed. So my question was that I know we might be a little old at this point. Is there studies that said cesarean sections, C-sections were on the rise? And I'm curious if that has anything to do with this study, because I think it was mentioned earlier that if, you know, a baby was born before 37 weeks, it was mentioned specifically how they were born.
Right. Did C-sections play a role in this? Thanks for that question.
Indeed it does. He's correct about that. I mean, C-sections are not the best outcome for a birth. I mean, vaginal birth is the best method to deliver, if possible. I mean, it is an advancement medically, and it saves lives. There's no question about that. But there are a lot of factors that are contributing to increased rates of cesareans.
And one of those factors is more women are scheduling them. Isn't that true?
Indeed,
isn't
they
that
are.
Part of this? They're Indeed. Opting for it.
Right. Yeah. They're putting it on their schedule because it's convenient, and or because sometimes it's convenient for the doctor. The doctor is telling them that they should schedule an appointment. And I think a lot of that has to do with The stress of modern life, and most women
gotta
nowadays
gotta fit that delivery in between all my other appointments.
Right, exactly.
Or the desire to control life experiences that really aren't meant to be controlled.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
I would also point out that in Jacksonville, this is also an access to healthcare issue. I mean, we live in a large, spread out community, and when a lot of people don't have insurance, or they don't have a doctor nearby, or they don't have transportation to get to a doctor, you know, maternal care and it's something that is important, and you can catch things early on during a pregnancy. And so if you don't have access to that, you are more likely to have complications down the road because maybe you didn't catch it early on.
Yeah, and maternity leave may also be a factor. I mean, in reality is that some women, they're not going to leave work. They're going to work until the very last day because they have such limited time that they can take and still get paid for work that they want to spend every minute they can with their new baby.
There's also healthcare coverage, insurance coverage, not just the access to actually having a doctor in your community that you can visit on a regular basis through your pregnancy, but having the insurance to cover things like prenatal vitamins and procedures and those checkups. That could be another issue as well. And we know that Duval is struggling with insurance coverage at the same time.
Yeah. And all of these failures all along the way lead to, I don't know if any of you have ever been to any of the hospitals in town, to been and taken a tour of a NICU, a neonatal intensive care unit, where they try to get the preterm babies to a place where they can go home. It's really extraordinary and scary to see these tiny babies in these little heated units that you can't even believe they made it and that they're alive sometimes. But they do incredible work in our local hospitals. But as we're all learning, what they're doing is compensating for failure because something went wrong. That there are so many babies like that in the local NICUs is a problem. Okay, let's go to Mark on the south side. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Thanks for having this topic. It's a great topic.
Sure.
I had a question and a comment. One of the first things that came to my mind, I'm an African-American male and married to an African-American woman. We have three kids. When I changed the diaper of my oldest daughter the first time, I was very tired, and I thought, how could a single woman, or just a single parent at all, you know, manage this? It was just stressful, just that first diaper change. And so I wonder if that study looked at African-American women who are married or have a reliable partner versus those who don't, and if that has anything to do with these infant mortality rates. I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. I'm not I do not know the answer to that. Do you, Tessa?
I believe this is all births. I think this is tracking all birth data, so it'll capture, you know, C-sections, natural births, you know, women with partners, women without, all births.
Okay. So, but then going from that, some of the higher preterm birth rates are attributable to Health Zone 1, which does have lower income women who do tend to be single parent headed households. So it may be a factor, but not the only factor.
And of course, I mean, they carry more stress with them.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to being women of color, and having a stressful pregnancy, no doubt, is not good for a birth outcome.
And as we continue to follow this story, the health department is, as I said, they are working on this issue. So we'll continue to follow it. And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday roundtable as we talk about the biggest headlines from the week around town. The number to join the show right now, 549-2937. We're going to move on and discuss some other news and notes from the week. Here is one that caught our eye. A solar cooperative that promised to bring the price of solar panels down 30%. Around the state through bulk buying. Well, they have suspended plans to expand that opportunity here in Duval County. Now, the co-op organizers say the reason why is a move by JEA to lower residential subsidies for excess solar power. The St. John Solar Co-op, which launched 3 months ago, has already signed up about 150 people who have incomes of about $50,000 a year, and they expect more signups before registration ends today. Now, originally, they wanted to set up shop in Duval by January, but JEA just made a big change to its rooftop solar policy. So Solar United Neighbors of Florida says it's going to halt plans to expand to Duval. Ryan Bank, does this mean we are the only county in the state that can't access this?
Well, I mean, obviously they're still expanding, so it's not across the entire state yet. But it does mean that we have been taken off the list of potential counties. We were supposed to be the next county after West Palm Beach or Palm Beach County, which was actually announced the opening of applications for their solar co-op the same day that news broke about them not coming to Duval. The plan was always to move northward to Duval because we actually have, although it's still pretty small and still growing, we have a pretty good solar market with a very large solar company. A1A Solar, which actually provided the panels and was the installer for St. John's County. I think their issue really is they see JEA's moves as good for the environment generally, but as a kind of a move against personal individualized rooftop solar.
So a move, is it fair to say it's a way for JEA to get a lock on the market.
Right, exactly. To get more of the market
share. More of the market share, sure.
It's a fascinating topic that we probably don't have time to get into all the nuances of, although have Pete from A1A Solar on here, but have that mute button ready because he can get that.
He was actually on this program a week or two ago with JEA talking about how they've changed their rooftop solar policy.
What's fascinating is the idea of what is a fair price to pay someone who has a solar panel, and a lot of it comes down to JEA saying they want to pay the residential customer who sends them energy the same that they would pay the solar farm sending them energy. The customer is saying, well, but if we buy it from you at this amount, we should be able to sell it to you at this amount. It's not really obvious that either one is correct, but it is obvious that without that subsidy, having solar panels don't make the same economic sense they used to. And Jacksonville did seem to be on kind of a nice momentum of more people getting interested in this, and then it's taken a hit.
It stalled out. Let me ask this question to callers. If you could get solar panels on your roof at a low cost, would you do it? How much would you be willing to pay to do this? What would be the price of entry for you? Give me a call on that at 549-2937.
I think it's worthy to mention also that this solar co-op is different than the solar customers that kind of got in at the ground floor, because the 1,000 or so customers that we already have in Duval County, those early adopters, they generally have a much larger household income and they were able to get in when it was still very expensive. These solar co-ops, they're people that are making middle class incomes, $45,000 to $50,000 a year, and they're able to afford solar because of the bulk buying, and they're saying that it only makes sense if they can have this 10 cents per kilowatt hour.
That's a really important point, because part of what JEA's argument has been on why they have to have lower payments is that basically it's a subsidy to those people, and they'll say, you know, we're taking payments from people making $40,000 a year to subsidize solar panels being bought by people making $100,000 a year. Where's the fairness? But now if you're taking payments from people making $40,000 a year to subsidize people making $40,000 a year, that's a different type of conversation.
Mm-hmm. Claire.
It's a little bit confusing as to why JEA really bothered to do this, because they were reimbursing people a couple of $100,000 total a year. And this is JEA is $1 billion a year, I mean, to their customers. So why even bother?
Florida Power and Light has been making similar moves.
Most of your large power, I mean, your large power companies are terrified that solar is going to become a big chunk of what is, you know, being done in the energy sphere. And
they've got to get ahead of it if they want to stay the game at all, right?
And where their fear comes from is it sounds good to have everybody on solar, but what happens on that cloudy day when suddenly you need to turn to the power company and you expect them to have all of the pieces in place, but you don't want to pay for it till you need it? And it's an interesting philosophical problem almost of what should, if you have your solar rooftop and you don't use JEA except when there's an emergency, how much should you pay for that?
Here, I keep coming back to this, though. In a state with so much sunshine, we are so far behind other states in a more widespread adoption of this technology, and that is a fact.
Well, we've actually been behind for quite a while.
Quite some time.
I remember doing a story years ago on a company here making solar panels here to ship them to, I don't know, to other states.
Exactly. But,
you know, the not the Sunshine State headlines have been around for a while.
Right. And so, and that's because powerful interests are trying to, as we're discussing
Big
right
sun.
Now, right.
Big sun. Big
yeah,
sun.
Big sun. Yeah, big sun. Corner the market on sun. I mean, is that fair? Is that fair to say, Tim Gibbons?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's power companies who have been entrenched and are, you know, powerful entities who have lobbyists. And you know, you look at the repeal of the Clean Power Plant Act by the Trump administration. That has been something that the power plants, generally speaking, have been asking for. You know, well, since it was put into place.
Right. I mean, and to be fair, JEA did increase or elongate the amount of time they have for people who want to be grandfathered in the into the 10 cents a kilowatt hour rate, the current rate, and they would be able to do it for 2 decades. And it would actually transfer from homeowner to homeowner. So if you put these panels on your house and you sold your home, the next person within that 20 years that buys your home would also be getting in on the ground floor with that rate. The issue is with this co-op is they were going to open applications in January for Duval. January, February, March, that's 3 months it takes for them to collect all the applications. And they have by April to get these installed. It's impossible. You have 200 people, 200 households who are installing solar panels. They said, we can't make it in by the grandfathering deadline.
Here's a tweet from Kingsley. If it's a Tesla roof, I'd sign up the minute we could afford it, co-op or not.
Elon Musk's new roof system is really cool looking. Not to totally geek out on it, but it...
what does it look like?
They're basically glass panels that, rather than being the big... what we're used to is, you know, the big sheets for solar panels. These almost look like tiles, basically. There's 3 different styles they come in, but they're neat.
All right. Well, if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable as we talk about the biggest stories of the week. Here's another one. Jacksonville government officials and business leaders traded in our sunshine and balmy temperatures this week for a high of 46 up in Toronto, Canada, where they went for the annual Jack's Chamber Leadership Trip. Yes, it's Toronto this year. Former mayor and incoming chamber chair John Payton picked Toronto because of the resurgence of that Canadian city's downtown. And he wants to find out how what succeeded there could apply to our urban core. Here's our question to callers. Do you think these Jack's Chamber trips are worth the money? Do you think they're helping the city of Jacksonville learn from other cities? Let us know what you think. 549-2937. Tessa Duval, there were quite a number of chamber members and attendees who went up to Toronto, which has become a world-class city and certainly a great place to visit.
No doubt. So being fairly new to Jacksonville, I know this has been going on for a while, but I kind of have a question for my panelists. Can you guys tell me anything that has come back from one of these trips? Like, can we point to any tangible results?
That's my honest question as well. This question has come up.
If you want studies, there are very nicely done studies that have definitely, absolutely come out of these trips.
But what do they do with the studies?
to be slightly less cynical, be like, Melissa, you know I hate being cynical.
Of course not.
And the unimpeachable Kevin Murchard is in my ear telling me that the Downtown Investment Authority came out of a trip to Cincinnati. It was created after they took a trip to Cincinnati and learned from Cincinnati about what they did.
He did. That and some of the things that we've done with sports marketing have come out of the trip.
So these trips can have some value.
And there's an interesting... yes, it feels like a junkety sort of thing. I will say, as you know, guy who edits a business publication, most of these people who go on this trip are paying for themselves. It's not public money. It's not chamber money. So there's a certain amount of, even if it's a junket, okay, so what? I mean, you know, it's people spending their own money to do this. And from a business community standpoint, there's the relationships that people develop as they go on these trips. There's the inspiration they get seeing a city like Toronto doing great things that, even if there's nothing tangible, you could at least argue that it gives those benefits.
Yeah, I mean, and as the Daily Record reported, and it was an excellent piece, I recommend anyone who wants to learn about this reading it. We're paying $25,000 as taxpayers, the city official estimated, for officials to go to the trip. But I did have a question. Why is it $3,200 for chamber members to go on the trip and $3,100 for city officials? What is that $100 for? I mean, are they skipping some lobster buffet or something? I mean,
I don't know.
Not entirely sure on that, but to Tim's point, the issue between tangible and intangible has always been something that has fascinated me about economic and business stories, because you have something like the Florida-Georgia game, right? And pretty soon we're going to get a press conference from from the sports office that's going to say we had this amount of economic impact as a result of the game. But if you peer closer into those numbers and you ask, okay, well, how much do we spend on extra policing? How much do we spend on advertising? How much do we spend on XYZ, on having transportation and buses run longer than they usually do? How much do we pay for that overtime? And how are you calculating how much each person spent, and how do you know it was part of the game? That's a much more complicated question. A lot of it is guessing, and a lot of it is using proprietary equations that are purchased for their use to come up with these numbers. So I think the tangible versus intangible argument is always one that comes out of these trips. You know, what tangibly is this doing?
Okay, 549-2937. Give us a call. Mark on the West Side. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, real quickly, about the sports office in the Florida-Georgia game, I've done this for years. Every time they put out those figures, I get in touch with them, usually the same person every year. And I say, how about you coming up with something that does the same thing for the Jaguars games? And, yeah, they just, over the years, they basically told me, well, we don't even try because there's no measurable, uptick in our economy because of the Jaguars game. But that was just interesting.
Yeah.
Listen, I tell you why I'm against these jaunts. Years ago, when they were just still talking about the Skyway Express, two or three council members had taken one of these jaunts down to Miami. I think they had one of the first ones. It may have been Baltimore. I can't remember. And without irony, they said to me that, because I used to question this back then, that the reason we've got the Skyway is because they went to another city and saw it in operation, and they just thought it was Jim Dandy. And so we have the Skyway Express because of one of these council trips. So I am 100% against them.
Oh, my goodness. Thanks for that tidbit, Mark. I didn't know that's how we got our Skyway. Is that true? I assume he's right, but I don't know for sure. I'll check it.
Checking on the Miami monorail, I guess?
Yeah, I don't know the details, but he's at least mostly true, if not totally true. It was monorail stuff like that was like
the— It was all the rage.
It was the new hotness. They probably actually used the phrase Jim Dandy when they came back.
And you know, Miami didn't finish theirs either.
Was that Baltimore trip how we got the landing?
That is possibly.
Yeah, no, because there was a similar development.
I don't think that was a chamber trip, though.
Yeah,
yes,
I mean, it just looks like
a similar.
But there was a similar development in Baltimore. Yeah. And by the way, the chamber trip to Toronto, all the people that went up, they are staying at the Four Seasons Toronto, which, by the way, is owned by Jacksonville Jaguars owner Shad Khan. A little bird told me that Four Seasons, that Khan might be looking to bring up Four Seasons to Jacksonville.
He was
that could
about
be part of all
shipyards
this
project
that he might want to get a Four Seasons built here as part of his shipyards development. So that's another reason that perhaps they chose Toronto. And here's an email from Jay. It seems like every year the city of Jacksonville sends people to other cities to see what they're doing right, what we can learn, and nothing changes. We've known for 20 years what needs to be done downtown. City leadership just doesn't have the backbone. They'll find a way for stadium improvements to dredge the river, but they won't act on a comprehensive large-scale investment plan because it means raising taxes and committing to a plan that will dismantle the good old boys network. If San Antonio in the middle of the Texas desert can have a vibrant riverfront, the only thing stopping Jacksonville is willful ignorance and cloistered power.
And that is actually probably in some ways a more fair critique of— I think San Antonio is actually one of the cities they went to. I know they've gone to other river cities, and there is a certain amount of, oh, wait, you have to go to a river city to be told, oh, you should do something with your river. That,
and by the way, the Riverwalk in San Antonio is a little creek.
Right, right.
Compared to what
that
we have,
way blown up.
River now, is a generous word.
It has not been mentioned, but there is there's legal marijuana in Toronto, right? I mean, so that it's possible that looking at the fine, upstanding chamber people, that's what led them to go there.
Oh, jeez. Damn.
That's a business.
Peggy is in Mandarin. Hi, Peggy. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. I am calling because I think it's a really neat coincidence that they have gone to Toronto to check out their city, because every time I think about what we should do in Jacksonville, I always think, well, what draws me to downtowns around the world? And I always want to go to someplace unique, like a tower, like the CN Tower. And I think in Jacksonville, it would be really great to go way, way up high on a tower. You could see all the way out to the ocean. You know, you could see the what's all around us and the vastness of our city, and it's flat. You could see forever as long as it's a clear day. I just think that would be a really nice asset and something to think about to draw people to downtown and make it a really unique skyline and a really interesting place to be.
Yeah, thanks, Peggy.
Well, we did think about that when that one company proposed just a very similar tower for the shipyards development. C-class. Y'all remember that?
That was one of the proposals. Mm-hmm.
But it was that y'all aren't from here kind of decision thing. So that company did not get the contract.
It didn't get the contract. All right. Well, it's our look finally at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state this week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida, and I kind of like this one. Only in Florida does a woman get arrested for biting her husband after he changed the password on their home computer. Guys, what are you thinking when you do that? It happened in Palm Bay. 53-year-old Mary Jo King got into an argument with her husband over the whole thing. She began striking him and then bit him on the head. Oh. She's been arrested for battery, domestic violence, and was taken to jail. It's not known if her husband can no longer go outside during daylight hours or if all garlic was removed from the home. And only in Florida and maybe only in Jacksonville does an officer try to break up a loud argument by playing a little soul music from the 70s. Now, you've probably seen the Facebook video on this by now. It's really cute. A resident in Springfield called police as a man berated her and a friend while they were sitting on their front porch. The friend was recording the confrontation on her phone as the officer pulled up. But when he showed up, it wasn't his siren blaring. Instead, the officer chose to play the 1975 war hit, "Why Can't We Be Friends?" Remember that song? JSO says it did the trick. You know, police are working on de-escalation techniques, humor, things like
Marvin
that.
Gaye next time. Now,
on JSO's Facebook page, they've posted this video, and they said not only did it calm everybody down, nobody was hurt, and nobody was arrested. Good job, JSO. And by the way, War will be performing Wednesday at the Greater Jacksonville Agricultural Fair.
Yes.
So how about that? Why can't we all be friends? We're going to listen to that oldie but goodie as we go to break. And thank you, Tessa Duval, Claire Goforth, Tim Givens, and Ryan Bank. Guys, have a good weekend.
You too.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks.
Hendrix Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
When I saw my Uncle Dominic, he pointed to his gun and said, "If you bring shame to me or my family, I will shoot you and I will shoot Anthony."
Join us for more true stories told live. Next time, a marriage opposed, a cop's unexpected duties, and trying to be friends with James Brown. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Make an appointment with Public Radio's favorite family doc on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health. It'll be a jam-packed hour in healthy living, including this recipe for
zucchini noodles with avocado, pesto, and shrimp.
We always have a great time. So will you on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX.
Sundays at 5 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sit back, relax, and travel back in time with 89.9 on Sunday nights beginning at 7 with Radio Theater.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Doo-wop Revival.
Good evening, I'm Glenn Fisher, the king of the doo-woppers.
Relax Radio. Throwback Sunday. Sunday nights beginning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT. Online at WJCT.org. Looking forward to looking back.
Welcome back. Well, they're a group of ophthalmologists from faraway lands, and they're coming here to Jacksonville to train for a week at local clinics. When their visit to the First Coast wraps up, they will take back visionary eye improvement techniques, to their home countries. It's all due to the Mike Williams Visionary Scholars Program, part of the Rotary Club of Jacksonville's International Service Project. Here with more, we welcome one of the ophthalmologists who's come to town. She's Dr. Bayanda Mambisa from South Africa. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
Good morning. And also with us, Bill Sorensen with the Rotary Club. He's co-chair of the Mike Williams Visionary Scholars Program Committee. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you're from Port Elizabeth, South Africa. You just got in last night?
Yes, I am. We arrived in the evening last night after quite a long trip via New York.
First trip to the States?
No, I have been here before.
Oh, okay. So you're an ophthalmologist. You've come here to Jacksonville to train at our local clinics. What are you hoping to learn? And by the way, there will be some other doctors coming in with you from Africa and Nepal, correct?
Yes, I met two of them at the airport yesterday when we landed, and I'm hoping to spend some more time with them as well.
And the purpose of this is for you to just learn techniques here in the States in your field, ophthalmology. What are you hoping to get out of it?
Well, I'm hoping to learn how things are done here, hoping to learn some best practice, and hoping to get some skills that I can take home and apply back home to hopefully improve the service that we're able to provide to our patients.
And how critical is that for you in your field of practice in Port Elizabeth?
Well, I mean, Port Elizabeth is a big city, and we are able to offer some services. We are constrained often by finances, by the environment there. But it's amazing how much we are able to do as well, and the service that we are able to offer to our patients. We offer quite a comprehensive service covering a whole wide range of areas in ophthalmology. And so I'm really hoping that it will be feasible to apply those back home.
Bill Sorensen, the Rotary Club has done this before. I remember you brought a group of doctors in last year. This is an annual project for your group.
That's right. This is the fifth year of our project here. It's a joint project with the American Academy of Ophthalmology and also sponsored here locally by the Edna Sproul Williams Foundation, which is a wonderful Jacksonville-based foundation whose family is members of our club as well. This class is the last of five where we brought in 20 doctors. And as you noted, this class will have a Nepal, Ghana, South Africa, and Kenya represented. But in the past, we've had a number of African nations.
And Rotary, of course, is a worldwide organization. So
that's
these
right.
Service projects span the globe. So that's really exciting.
It is. And it's a very important mission of our club just to help others internationally serve at-need communities.
And also what I understand is after this group trains in Jacksonville, they'll go on to New Orleans for the National Academy of Ophthalmology Conference.
That's right. So each year, the doctors will come to Jacksonville for a week and spend time at a number of either clinics or hospitals that have participated with us over this period of time, and then go to the national conference where they'll hear seminars and more importantly, network with doctors from around the country.
Which clinics and hospitals in Jacksonville are part of all this?
So we the doctors will spend time over the week at Vision is Priceless, at the Levinson Eye Associates, Florida Eye Specialist, Clay Eye Physicians and Surgeons, Florida Retina Institute, at Nemours, and at Nowrin Smithwick Ophthalmology Associates. And these clinics have supported us this entire duration of the program and love it.
And they're doing this pro bono.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so why did you choose ophthalmology, doctor? What is it about this that you love?
But I think ophthalmology is a great specialty for a woman.
Why is that?
There are no major emergencies. You know, the quality of life is great. And I also loved the fact that it's a combined medical and surgical specialty. So you're not only in the clinic all the time seeing patients, but you can also go to theater and operate. And
you can actually have a life.
You can have a life.
So what's your hope after you finish up here in the States? You're all going to go back to your practices. You hope being better physicians, having, I hope, better outcomes for your patients.
Yes, that is the plan. And I think I work in a unit back home where the other, my colleagues are always trying to improve things and better the services that we offer to our patients. So I'm really hoping that we'll be able to implement a lot of the things that I learn when I'm here.
And just to be clear, Bill, Rotary brought the doctors here all expenses paid, right?
They did, jointly with the AAO. We co-sponsor the fees, so there's no expense to the doctors for the travel and for the boarding. And in fact, here in Jacksonville, we have host families, which I think is the greatest benefit of the program, and their club members that the doctors will stay at their
homes. Oh, you're staying with the family for the week. That's nice.
Yes. No, it's lovely. I've had a really warm welcome with the Kellys, and I'm really looking forward to spending the next couple of days with them as well.
And this is through the Mike Williams Visionary Scholars Program. What is that?
So Mike Williams is deceased, but he was a past member of our club, and his family has numerous members of our club, David and Johnny Williams. And it was a particular passion of theirs through the foundation they've established to serve the community. And there's actually a joint program with Mercy Ships that's involved with this scholarship as well, where we're trying to fund equipment for Mercy Ships. And this was to honor Mike Williams and for his commitment to our club and his commitment to the community.
Very nice. Well, thank you both for being here, and enjoy your week here, by the way. I hope you have a blast and learn a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Dr. Bayanda Mambisa, ophthalmologist from South Africa, Bill Sorensen with Rotary Club, co-chair of the Mike Williams Visionary Scholars Program Committee.
Thank you.
And that is happening this week as ophthalmologists come here to Jacksonville. They'll train for a week at a number of clinics all around the community, and then they'll head on to the Big Easy New Orleans. Have you been there ever, by the way?
No, I've never been to
New Orleans. Hey, this is a great city, but let me just tell you right now, you're in for a treat in New Orleans.
Oh, great.
Have fun. You're going to really enjoy that. They're going to move on to New Orleans for the National Academy of Ophthalmology meeting. All expenses paid from Downtown Rotary Club of Jacksonville. It's their international service project. Pretty cool stuff. So many good people in this community doing amazing work. And this is a global project, too. So it's nice to see how Jacksonville plugs into charity projects all over the world. A quick break. And when we come back, we're going to drop into one of the most beautiful places in town and one of the best kept secrets. A beautiful oasis in the heart of the city, the Jacksonville Arboretum. Find out how you can take in its beauty and have a fabulous time. That's coming up in just a moment. We'll tell you about it. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9. Back in a moment.
On WJCT's radio reading service at 8 a.m. weekday mornings, it's 3 hours of news, op-eds, and obituaries from your local newspaper. Here's a call we received from someone who listens online.
I'm very happy to tell you that my daughter found the app for the radio reading service on my tablet, and I'm using that, and it's excellent. I enjoy all the programs.
If you're living with blindness and want to hear what's in the paper, go to wjct.org/radio reading, underwritten by Florida Eye Specialists.
Where do you start with the news this week?
The end of the beginning, not the beginning of the end.
Not the beginning of the end, the end of the beginning.
New York under attack, the green card lottery program under fire, and the Russia investigation's targets under indictment. The Friday News Roundup next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Dogs can do amazing things with their noses, sniff out explosives, drugs, and even certain cancers. On the next Fresh Air, how dogs rely on their sense of smell and detect smells we can't. We talk with Alexandra Horowitz, author of Being a Dog. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm Ira Flatow. On the next Science Friday, a look at the medicinal potential of deadly killer snails.
Venom is actually a cocktail. I like to call it nature's deadliest cocktail.
Plus, can you be a self-employed scientist renting out your skills? Science in a gig economy, all on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's your chance to enjoy a beautiful outdoor setting, plus food and drinks from the best places in town at the 4th Annual Arboretum Food and Wine Fest. Here with a preview, attorney Lawrence Gearham, president of the Arboretum Board of Directors. Good morning.
Good morning.
And board member Dr. Melinda Simmons. She's an instructor with JU. Good to see you.
Thank you for having us.
And this is a way to drop in on the Arboretum, which is such a beautiful oasis in the heart of the city, and really kind of party it up and have a great time. Let's begin with you, Lawrence. This is, first of all, let's explain to people who've never been. The Jacksonville Arboretum and Gardens is an incredible jewel in the middle of the city of Jacksonville. I love that place. Tell us about it.
Yes, well, it's we've been open since 2008, November 2008, and we're on a 120 acre piece of property. We have 13 different ecosystems. We have a lake loop and some trails, and it's really just a wonderful place to come out and enjoy nature. And Melinda gives a number of tours at our facility.
We have several different programs that we offer most Saturdays of the month, discovering nature nearby, and you can also call us for private tours. And we have different events throughout the year, including our Arboretum, which is our big event tomorrow from 3 to 6.
Right. And now this is cool because nearly 20 restaurants, caterers, and local craft brewmasters are going to be on hand for this. So you can eat and drink your way all
Absolutely.
Through the Arboretum.
Yes. So this is a time to come out and drink wine and really wonderful high-end food. We recommend not wearing your heels so that you can enjoy our 3.5 miles of trails, play some games.
And it's just so you know, you can get tickets at our website, www.jacksonvillearboretum.org. We're also going to be selling tickets, walk-up tickets at the event. It's from 3 to 6 tomorrow, and the tickets are $55 and $100 per couple. However, for our members, we give a 10% discount, and we encourage all who come to, you know, and enjoy our facility to become a member and support the, you know, this wonderful, what we think is really a hidden jewel of the city.
It is a hidden gem, and I encourage everyone to check it out. It's at 1445 Milko Road in the Arlington area, like
right.
off Monument Road.
If you're going north on 9A and you take that Monument exit, we're the first left. And we also encourage you, if you do sign up for a membership, you get 10% discounts to all of our events, as well as free admission to our Nature at Night events. And we are also giving away a free pair of tickets. So I believe if you call into the station.
That's right. We have a ticket giveaway right now for the Arboretum Food and Wine Fest, which is tomorrow, Saturday, November 4th, from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Arboretum and Gardens. Email us right now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. The unimpeachable producer of this program, Kevin Merschart, will pick a winner at random. What we'll do is email you the name of the winner, guys, and that winning name can pick up the tickets
at will call.
At will call.
Tomorrow at the event.
By the way, at your silent auction, you are going to be auctioning off a signed guitar by former Van Halen member Sammy Hagar.
Absolutely.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. I think I'm going to enter that raffle, see how I do.
Very nice.
Hang that on my wall.
And this is also sentimental for you because the chairman and the event founder of the Arboretum, Willis Jones, just passed away.
So he did.
This is in his memory, correct?
Absolutely. This is Willis's event, and he got this started. He's made it the wonderful thing that it is, and we will be doing a dedication for him tomorrow. We're hoping that Sidetrack Duo, who's our fabulous band that'll be there tomorrow, will play some of his hits, some of Willis's favorite songs, and we'll unveil his a bench that is dedicated in his memory.
Yes, we will. And it really is a special event that, you know, again, it's really his brainchild, and he founded it. So we're going to be doing this one for him tomorrow.
I don't know if you saw recent articles talking about the healing power of just taking what they call a forest bath. Just walking through the woods.
Soaking in nature.
And it really is so therapeutic. And if you live somewhere where you think you can't really get to a nature trail, well, you can, because this really is in a central location and easy to get to.
It's amazing to have 13 different ecosystems 5 miles from downtown. It's perfect. And we have huge parking, and we can bring busloads of kids out. So if you're interested in having a program or bringing a group out or having a picnic, we have wonderful picnic tables and lots of seating. Please come on out, and we're just going to celebrate life tomorrow and enjoy food and wine with friends.
Already getting your emails. Email the show now, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, to win a pair of tickets to the big fun event tomorrow, the 4th Annual Arboretum Food and Wine Fest at the Jacksonville Arboretum. You can learn more at jacksonvillearboretum.org. Thanks so much to board member and chair Dr. Melinda Simmons and Lawrence Gearum. Have fun out there.
Thank you.
Looks like you'll have good weather. Yeah,
it
looks like you'll have good weather for it too.
Absolutely.
Enjoy yourselves.
Thank you.
All right, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Our podcast is up at iTunes, Stitcher, and through our app. And if you missed anything this morning, you can catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. Up next on 1A, the Friday News Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.